Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This is Division 5 of the Court of Appeals, and we're here at the 10 o'clock docket just to hear one case. That's Barfield against Hall Realty. See the counselor present. Set up. Thank you very much. You may begin.
If it please the court, Rufus Wilderson, registration number 14361, appearing on behalf of the plaintiff appellant in this matter, Mr. Gilbert Barfield. Your Honors, sometimes to explain situations, it's helpful to take the extreme look at issues, take the extreme facts to help you decide what the law is or should be. And with your permission, I'd like to do that in this case. Let's assume in this case, instead of a statement in some broker's advertising, let's assume that we have some vacant land for sale. And we look at it, and on the land, all you see is a portal into the side of a hill. That's all that's there. The broker looks at that and says, this is going to be hard to sell in this particular market, so I'm going to have to dress this up just a little bit. And that particular broker puts in his MLS and puts in his advertising brochures, gold mine for sale. And lo and behold, somebody comes by and says, I've always wanted to hold a gold mine. Let's jump on the opportunity. Buys it. And about 3 years later discovers that this really isn't a gold mine at all. In fact, it's a root cellar. That's all that into the hill. It's just dug inside there. And lo and behold, he sues the broker. And as it turns out, it's the broker who made that statement up. Just decided that's something he should call it. Doesn't investigate it. Just says it's a gold mine. He sues the broker, and the broker wanders into court and says, well, about that representation. I'm just a transaction broker. I'm not liable. I think we would all conclude that's not the law. Because what he's being sued on is his statement. His statement that was made up that said, this is a gold mine. He's not being sued for not investigating whether it was a gold mine or not. It may turn out he knew it, or he was in utter disregard as to whether it was or not. But he's being sued for his statement, not his lack of investigation.
Well, Mr. Wilderson, in paragraph 20 of your complaint, you say defendants failed to act reasonably in ascertaining the accuracy of their representations. And as you go on in paragraph 23 and you incorporate that allegation in your claim for fraud, finally in paragraph 33, you say defendants had a duty to disclose. So if I'm going to turn your hypothetical into the facts of this case, I'd have to say, first of all, this transactional broker saw an operating gold mine in existence, and that the question was whether or not there was a claim to the mine. And the argument is that the transaction broker should have investigated and found there was or was not a claim. I mean, that's the way your complaint is set up.
I'm not sure that I agree with that assessment. I think the way the complaint is set up and what was aimed at was, initially we were unclear as to who made the negligent misrepresentation or misrepresentation, whether it be fraudulent or negligent. Therefore, we said defendants, plural, did that. Could be the seller. Could be the broker. As it turns out in discovery, we find out that in fact it was the broker who created the misrepresentation. And therefore, it's the broker who has the obligation, if you make a statement, you're responsible for those statements.
Well, under the law, the transactional broker has no duty. That's what the statute provides. And don't we have to, before we decide whether or not a claim is made, we have to determine, is there a duty in the first instance?
Well, understand what the statute says. It doesn't say brokers have no duty, period. The statute says there are no duties to do certain things. There's no duty to investigate what the seller has said. That's very clear. And in the gold mine example, if the seller had said to the broker, you know, this thing is a gold mine, and he simply reiterated that, no duty to investigate that statement by the seller. He has no duty to investigate the property. He has no or to tell anybody about it. And by the way, that particular duty or lack of duty applies whether it's a transaction broker or whether it's a seller's broker or whether it's a buyer's broker. They have no duty to the other side.
As I understand your argument, really, you're saying that 1261.807 really isn't relevant here. I mean, you're talking about the obligations of the broker in to avoid fraud or mere negligence, right? This neither insulates the broker nor from the consequences of a negligent misrepresentation, nor triggers additional duties to investigate.
Correct. It just doesn't apply in this particular case.
Although 1261.807.4 says, and I quote, that the transaction broker has no duty to conduct an independent inspection of the property for the benefit of the buyer and has no duty to independently verify the accuracy or completeness of statements made by the seller or independent inspectors. And when you combine that with the language in 807.2, that the disclosure duties of the broker are only to disclose adverse material facts actually known, then you have to, it seems to me, in order to find a duty, you have to either find that the transactional broker actually knew, or that, or else they have no duty.
Well, let's follow that up for a moment. Find out that they actually knew, in which case it would be clearly fraud. Or find out that, in fact, they should have known upon investigation. Now, they don't have a duty to investigate, but if they make a statement and they go to the public, whole cloth, and make a statement to the world representing the condition of property, they can help be held liable for that statement. That's where the duty arises. The duty arises because they did something positively. The transaction broker statute doesn't require them to make statements either. It says you just cannot be held liable for these particular things. One, passing off information that was untrue from the seller, or two, having some requirement to investigate the property before you market it. They don't have to do that either. We agree with that. But if they go beyond that and make the statement, it's a gold mine, they can be held liable for that particular statement. And that's all we're asking for here. And there's no limit, or this particular transaction broker statute isn't exclusive. It doesn't say there are no duties except these. To the contrary, it just limits very specifically what they cannot be held liable for.
Counsel, let's assume for the sake of argument that I agree with your sort of legal template as you've laid it out. What evidence do you have here that the statement made here was made negligently?
Well, here's the next part of the case. How do we get to this particular summary judgment? We allege in the complaint that it was made negligently. We allege in the complaint that it was made with utter disregard for its truth or veracity. That was the allegation, and that was what was assumed to be true for the purposes of the summary judgment motion. And that assumption being made, we responded saying, okay, assuming that's to be true, here's the way the statute works. In the reply brief, there was an affidavit attached where the broker involved says, well, I thought it was true. And that goes to whether the statement was true or not. We never had a chance to respond to that. That's the problem. What evidence do we have? We have our allegations. We have, second, the clear evidence and her admission that she created this statement from whole cloth. And further, we have the circumstances. How would she not know that certain impacts were happening on this property? She made the statement. She should have investigated it. That's our only evidence. We never got a chance to look into that, because we were cut off at the knees on summary judgment long before much discovery happened in this case.
Well, Mr. Wilderson, was there any dispute in the record? Was the business operating at the time it was sold?
The business was operating, and there's no record on it. I can just tell you what I know about it. But again, the reason there's no evidence of the record is this was something that was brought in on reply. We never had a chance to respond and say, well, just a minute here. Actually, the business was operated by the seller for nearly a year after the sales transaction. It's just an agreement between the buyer and seller. It was not operated for the following year because the owner just didn't have the wherewithal to get it done. And when they started to operate it the third year, these issues arose. We didn't have a chance to present that to any particular court because the court relied upon an affidavit put in reply. And we would have supplemented to say, just a minute here. No, in fact, it's more than just regulatory issues. It's the physical supply of water that simply cannot serve this resort. It's not designed for it. It's the physical sewer system that simply cannot serve this resort. It's not designed for it. And we could have supplemented, we could have had the evidence presented for that, and we had a full record to reply. That's not what happened. What happened is all the allegations in the complaint were assumed true for the purpose of summary judgment. Then it was supplemented, additional arguments were presented. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Back to the gold mine analogy,
I don't think we would have any trouble concluding that the broker, transaction broker, seller broker, doesn't make any difference, who created and lied about something being a gold mine should be held accountable for. That seems fairly clear in the law. It's not anywhere stopped by the statute. We would also have no trouble concluding under the statute that if he simply reiterated what the seller said, he cannot be held liable, because that's very clearly what the statute says. And if he just didn't know and didn't say anything, he can't be sued for having failed to investigate. That's not what the, that's what's clearly excluded from the statute. What is not excluded from the statute is any statement that he cannot be held liable for any representations that the broker makes, and that's all we're asking in this matter. And with that, I'll pause and answer any questions and reserve the remainder of time.
Yeah, before you sit down, Mr. Wilkerson, I'd like to make sure I understand. Your position here is that the transactional broker had, you're assuming, I take it for purposes of your claim, that the transactional broker actually knew of the water situation.
I don't think it matters. I think the transactional broker could have made the representation that this was an ongoing business. And if it was not an ongoing business or not a business opportunity, for instance, because of regulatory or physical concerns, and she did nothing to investigate that, that actually that statement is negligent. And if she makes a negligent misrepresentation in the context of a commercial transaction, she can be held accountable for that.
And her duty to investigate comes from simply making the statement.
Yes, precisely. If she said it was a gold mine, she should have known it was before she said so.
So, in effect, a transactional broker can't make any statements in advertising or to a potential buyer without assuming the duty that those statements are absolutely accurate.
Cannot make a statement unless she's simply repeating what the seller has told her.
How is that different than the law in Morrison against Goodspeed?
Morrison against Goodspeed, as I recall, is a fraud case.
It's the seminal fraud case in Colorado.
Right. And I'm not really familiar with the facts. It's been a long time since I've read that particular case.
Well, let's assume that in order to assert a claim for fraud, you have to actually know of the material fact or have a duty to know.
Or act with indifference, utter indifference as to its truth or falsity. That's another aspect of being false. And if the broker acted with utter indifference as to whether the statement was true or false, knowing or not, that's a fraudulent statement. Did that answer your question,
sir? Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have almost 2 minutes remaining.
My name is Keith Boughton. I represent the defendant below, the appellee here, Hall Realty. I discern from the questions that each of you have presented that the briefs have been thoroughly read. There's absolutely not a single hot judge and two others attending. And so I very much appreciate the fact that this case is well understood by the court before we begin. At some point, however, an opinion is going to have to be published or at least written in which the term turnkey business opportunity is a feature of the text of the opinion. And it's going to hinge on whether a real estate agent who goes out to a property and takes a picture of it and sees that there's a grocery store and business is being transacted and puts it onto a piece of paper with scotch tape in some restaurant in Gunnison and said, here is a turnkey business opportunity, without having assumed, gee, did I hear those words exactly from the seller? Because if I actually believe my own eyes and can see that it's a turnkey operation, I'm going to have to go out and research what the zoning regulations in Gunnison County are and the health regulations in the state of Colorado and determine what discretionary ruling might be issued by one of the people who could enforce this, and tell these people that 3 years hence your business opportunity might be shut down. That just can't be the law in this case. If it is, let's say it out loud. Let's tell every broker in the state, if you open your mouth and put any puff whatsoever into your advertising, if you put any lipstick whatsoever on a pig, you're going to find yourself in court. Even though you have no duty and you attend classes and you go to school and you are told and you take lessons and you take a test and it says, when you are a transaction broker, you have no duty to conduct any independent investigation for the benefit of the buyer of the information that you have learned from the seller. Now, if we buy into the appellant's argument, the only information that we can get is if it comes out of somebody's mouth and into their ear, because if they use their eyes and say, gee, this looks like a business opportunity, all of a sudden they have assumed every common law obligation to either know or reasonably know or undertake to do a duty to investigate, to drive from Lake City to Gunnison and pour through the county records there and see if the building inspector and his discretionary folks that work there are going to take this point of view 3 years hence. This cannot be. The analogy that this was somehow seen as a gold mine, well, let's follow up on that. Assume that in the picture that the was taken on the digital camera when the broker went out showed the tipple, showed the slag pile, showed the gold being refined.
Counsel, as I understand your argument here, you are actually not contesting that the statute neither, it seems to be widely agreed the statute doesn't place special burdens on the transaction broker.
Correct.
And neither does it insulate the broker from an action for statements that are truly negligently made.
That's correct.
Your argument really just centers on the fact that in your view, this statement wasn't negligently made, that based on the information available to the broker, this was a reasonable thing to say.
This is probably the precipitating factor that prompted the appeal. Certainly, as counsel for Hall Realty, I would not have said, for the purposes of this motion, please assume that my client negligently misrepresented the case. Instead, what I asked the court below to do was to look at the naked factual allegations, unadorned by any particular spin or conclusion that might be applied to it, or look at the understanding that the plaintiff might have had when they said negligent misrepresentation. Instead, I was looking at the non-legal conclusory ultimate statement and say, what representation was it made? Now let's see is it negligent. First, there's no duty. It couldn't have been negligent because there was no duty to undertake anything to investigate whether it was accurate or not. So to the extent that this case is precipitated by a misunderstanding between the advocates over whether the allegation he negligently misrepresented, and then the moving party on summary judgment says, please accept the naked factual allegations as the truth and tell me whether a turnkey business opportunity representation is in fact negligent. And that was the issue that Judge Patrick centered on when he said, I do not find this to be negligible or actionable.
So when you say we're assuming facts to be true, you're not talking about assuming the allegation, the conclusory allegation that this is negligence. You're assuming that given these alleged events, one could not reasonably infer that there was negligence.
Absolutely.
Okay, to follow up on that then, so it was not a concession that the statement was made with utter indifference to the falsity or truth?
It could not have been. Otherwise, I am really spinning my wheels when I spend my time drafting briefs, convincing judges below, and then end up driving to Denver 7 hours over closed roads.
So my next question would be, can that allegation of utter indifference ever be made against a transaction broker?
Hypothetically, I don't believe that is the issue that's faced here, but I would say no, because if there is utter indifference, then it means that they must have had some kind of obligation to learn a real fact, and since they have no obligation to conduct any investigation, then how on earth can they utterly disregard a fact they have no duty to learn?
Well, let me give you an example. Let's assume in this particular case, your client infers not merely that this is a turnkey operation, but by looking at the car that the current owner drives, infers that this is a profitable turnkey operation, and this grosses between $20,000 and $25,000 a month, and advertises that fact, that this will make the new buyer richer by $20,000 or $25,000 a month. Well, certainly, if you're going to make that representation, you would agree that the broker had some obligation to determine whether that's true or not.
I would absolutely have to concede that, because those aren't the facts in this case.
Of course not. But so that in answer to my colleague's question, the answer would be certainly there are circumstances in which facts could be made in utter indifference to the truth.
Well, with regard to a business opportunity, there is a period of due diligence, and in this case, the books and records were made available. But I would like to shift gears, noticing that my time is moving on. The Sheffield case, I think, is dispositive on a different matter, and that was a case in which a buyer became upset that the seller had not disclosed facts that could be found in the public record. And that's what the allegations are here, that somehow or another this broker in 2005 did not disclose that in 2008 the governmental regulatory entities would somehow shut him down, because there must have been some place in 2005 regulations that could be found about what was going to happen in 2008, and those were in the public record, and somehow we must assume that the broker had actual knowledge of that. Well, so did everyone with access to the public record, and I think the Sheffield case is in fact dispositive on that particular point. And it is cited in the brief, and it's Sheffield Services Company versus Trowbridge, 211 Pacific 3rd, 715. But I want to also focus on what I thought was the best point that was made in the appeal brief by my adversary, and that is that there was, in fact, an affidavit appended to a reply brief, and the judge, in his opinion, specifically stated, I'm convinced that Anna Bloom couldn't possibly have known this stuff. Now, I don't believe that added one iota to the decision. The decision, as written by Judge Patrick, first went through with a decision-making model that analyzed what is the duty of this person, finding none. Then he looks at what is this statement, turnkey business opportunity, and then concludes, that's not actionable. And then he tosses in what I would call surplusage. Oh, and by the way, she really didn't know anything. Now, I don't believe that the appellants, the plaintiffs, were prejudiced in the first place by having the judge accept as true all of the allegations that the plaintiff made, unadorned by the spin, stripped of its conclusory veneer. But if it did, there are much less onerous things that can be done, and certainly have been done to any litigators with as much skill as folks that have got registration numbers like Mr. Wilderson and I have. They file motions to reconsider. They file applications for surreply. So bringing it all the way up here to the Court of Appeals to then come back down and say, what exactly is the fact that will either be in the possession of the plaintiff now pursuant to Rule 11 when he signed the pleading, that my client, Hall Realty, had actual knowledge of the regulations that were in the public record and deliberately concealed them to try and prompt a sale? There is none. If there were, the allegations in the complaint would be much stronger than, well, they either did this or they did that in reckless disregard. They don't have a fact to support it. And I would urge that the opinion of Judge Patrick be affirmed on the basis that he correctly analyzed the duty. Furthermore, that his analysis of the term turnkey business opportunity based on the facts as admitted by the appellee from the plaintiff's own allegations is not actionable, and that the affidavit was one, surplusage, and two, no prejudice to the plaintiffs, and I thank you.
Thank you.
Here are some of the facts that were admitted. Defendants provided false information to Barfield in advertising, negotiating, and entering the agreement. That's paragraph 18 of the complaint. Defendants provided such false information to Barfield in the course of a transaction in which defendants had a financial interest. Paragraph 20, defendants failed to act reasonably in ascertaining the accuracy of the representation to Barfield. Those are the facts they admitted.
Well, counsel, let's go back to your very first one there. Isn't that merely a conclusion? What is the fact that you allege to be false?
The fact that this was a turnkey business opportunity for the operation of for 12 sites of an RV resort. That was false information. It wasn't turnkey. Now, perhaps a jury looks at this after hearing the evidence and says, that's mere puffery. Perhaps a jury says, oh, no, that's really not what was envisioned at all by the representation. But you have the opportunity to present the question of its falsity in light of all the things that happened in the transaction to the jury before the jury can say yes or no, it was not. But what you cannot do is say we assume it was false because that is the allegation, and then turn around and say, well, it's not false, it's really puffery. That's a direct contravention. With respect to the assertion that Sheffield governs this case, had that issue been raised at the trial court level, which it was not, we would have responded quite simply by saying, listen, you're right. We probably were inartful in drafting the complaint. Instead of just saying that the system, water system and sewer system were inadequate and shut down by the state, we should have said they were physically inadequate. And that is an additional reason to hold these statements to be false. With respect to the allegation that we should have asked for a reconsideration or a surreply, the order was entered by the judge 2 days, by the way, after the reply was entered, and didn't have much of a chance. In the 15 years I've practiced in Gunnison, I've asked Judge Patrick to reconsider innumerable times. I've never had it happen once, though he did recant for a short time to let us mediate one issue. So with that, I see my time is out.
Thank you
very much.
The court thanks both counsel for their arguments. And this case will be being submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. That concludes the court's docket.